Welcome to Pleb Chain Radio, a live show brought to you by Plebs for Plebs, which focuses on the intersection of Nostr and Bitcoin protocols. Join QW and Avi as they run down the weekly news and developments, breaking down the current thing and the future frontier with the foundation of decentralization, the builders, thinkers, doers, and plebs. All right, we are live.
Welcome, gentle plebs, to episode number 69 of Pleb Chain Radio. Today is Friday, the 12th of July, and it is 6:38 p.m. on the east coast of the United States at the time of recording. Episode number 69, QW. This is going to be a nice one.
It's because just 69, Avi. You don't have to get all excited about it. You know what I mean?
I'm just saying it's a nice episode. And that's because our guest...
A gratifying episode, Avi?
our guest this evening is Rev Hoddle, homesteader, permaculture champion, and gentle pleb. And we're happy to have him return for a second round on Pleb Chain Radio. And just a reminder...
I will say Rev is a memorable person when you meet him. Well-spoken, just... tad bit inspiring. I think there's a reason he's getting the attention he deserves and coming on our show for the second time.
Indeed. And just a reminder, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, first of all, thank you. But I would urge you to hit pause and switch to Fountain, where you can earn some sats and support the value for value movement. And QW, another bit of exciting news. Pleb Chain Radio is also available on a brand new Nostr client for podcasting called Fanfares. And we are the first Nostr verified podcast in history.
Ain't that something? I mean, wow. The history books, let it be known.
Let it be known indeed. Also, if you're listening to the live show, you can listen on NostrNess and Zap.stream. So before we jump into our sermon, QW, there was some exciting news coming out of Fountain, where Oscar Murray has launched the next beta of Fountain. So this is only on test flight as of now. It's going to be live closer to the end of the month, and we'll have Oscar on our show next week to talk about that. But it is exciting because this new test flight version of Fountain is a Nostr client, and you and I, QW, and a few others are the early testers on it. And it's been fun. We've been sending notes on Fountain. The boosts now show up as Zap events on any regular Nostr client. You can comment on it in Fountain. You can even post memes from Fountain. Try posting a meme from Spotify to your X account.
You know, I did notice, I think it might be a reactionary play that Spotify announced that they're starting to have chats I don't know how they're going to play that out, but clearly not as good as Fountain.
Oh, certainly not. Again, it's going to be, even if they do introduce chats, it's going to be confined to that walled garden that is Spotify, right? Other social client has any capability even of looking within the walls of Spotify. In other interesting developments...
I will add to that. When Oscar was on our show, episode 32, if I remember correctly, he did say podcasting needs Nostr. And I'm beginning to see, and I didn't really, I mean, he's certainly been in the podcasting building this Fountain for, I don't know, 2.5 years or so, maybe 3 years. I don't know the exact date, but I remember kind of at the beginning how hot my phone would get. But with that said, I think he had a very big vision of how Nostr can be incorporated. And I think we're starting to see that. It's amazing to be a part of.
Yeah, and that should be a fun conversation next week. Hopefully, it will coincide with the launch of the App Store app, the new App Store app for Fountain. Another interesting development, QW, that happened a week or so ago is OpenSats launched an education initiative, and this was announced by our friend Dredd, who's on the OpenSats board. And as you know, OpenSats has initiatives for developers, both for Bitcoin and Nostr, right? But it is interesting that they're now pivoting to funding educational initiatives. And this includes, if I understand correctly, some cultural initiatives as well. If you're writing books that are educational or cultural in their bent, then there is an opportunity potentially. Or if you have a website, right, or building a game that's educational or cultural, there is an opportunity to apply for a grant and get that education initiative started. So, pleb service announcement here. If you are a gentle pleb building out an educational app or venture of some sort, or a cultural app or venture of some sort, go to the OpenSats grant website. There's a drop down there. You can choose education and put in your application. And
I really like that. It was needed. I feel like they've really focused on the analytical side of funding and forgot about the hearts. You know, they focused on the minds and forgot about the hearts. So, like we've talked about, and like you coined, culture's upstream of adoption. I truly think that speaks to me. It speaks to my wife. Some of those more emotional types that we definitely need that as the next phase of adoption occurs. I love that OpenSats is working towards that.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's so much that they forgot about a QW. I think their primary focus has been on making sure the foundation at the protocol layer, both Bitcoin, Lightning, and Nostr, is strong, and then also next the application layer, right? The different applications that feed off this foundation are funded, and now they're moving up the stack, and we're getting to the education and culture layer, which is what brings people in to use these tools.
Right.
So it's great that they're doing it. And for our sermon today, QW, balance beyond the meme.
Well, you know, it's episode 69, Avi. You know, and when I look at that number, I think about you, Avi. Well, not so much you personally, but I reflect back to you when we first kind of gathered around in the early days of Nostr. You were doing that, and we've spoke on the show about it. But you would kind of throw a post out or a note out saying, you know, give me a number, and you would just tear people apart based off that number, maybe the symmetry, maybe the whatever it may be. But your fascination with numbers.
It wasn't so much just numbers, QW. This is the pre-Zap days. We're talking about December of 2022 and January of 23, when Zaps weren't yet a thing. And you could copy paste a Lightning invoice, and most Nostr clients would render those invoices in a nice format with a little button that you could click on to pay it if you wanted to. So I'd ask people to post invoices in the replies with a different number of sats on that invoice, and I would then, for fun, you know, critique the symmetry, as you said, and the shape and so on of those numbers. And if I liked it, I would zap it. If I didn't, I would roast. I'd like to think gently roast the poster. And that game was a hit. I think a lot of people enjoyed it in the early days of Nostr.
Oh, I thought, I mean, that attracted me to you. I'm like, this guy's not all there in the head. So let's be friends. So, I mean, just beyond a balance beyond the meme. I mean, beyond the meme of 69, that number has a pretty good balance to it, doesn't it? Is it very symmetric?
There is a symmetry to it.
Kind of like the yin to the yang, the perfectly balanced opposite, I suppose. But when I think about that, I think about balance with within the culture, that reciprocity. Value for value is reciprocity. You know, what I create, you know, maybe you enjoy, so you shoot some sats, or maybe you offer something else. In a perfect world, our club culture will primarily focus on balance, finding that symmetry within the culture. We all bring something to the table type of thing. To take is also to give, kind of creating that that perfect balance. Whether balance is ever achieved, it's not. But to me, it's always been a goal in my life, you know, balancing my heart and my mind, the spirit of the boy, the wisdom of the man, whatever it may be. But the longer we grow within the space as individuals, the more we start realizing it's not about what Bitcoin does for us. It's not about what Nostr does for us, but what we can do for it. And I think that's where that reciprocity comes internally, where I want to balance out what I'm receiving from this. And that's really where balance beyond the meme comes from to me. What do you think? Do you feel like the more you've gotten into Bitcoin, the more you've gotten into, let's say, Nostr or the community itself, the more it inspired you to want to return, you know, give back? It's not about the NGU. It's about the change or whatever it may be.
Yeah, it certainly has, QW. It's I found by getting into Bitcoin and then a few years later getting into Nostr, my life has been so enriched by just being part of the community. My perspective shifting by as my understanding of, so, and this is especially true of Bitcoin, right? As my understanding of Bitcoin grew, and certainly my life was enriched as a result. And I felt there was a point I reached when I said that, what can I do now? I can give back. I need to give back. And that's what we look. I'm not a dev, QW. Neither you nor I are devs, but we can contribute at the cultural level, right? Try and expand this culture and draw more people into the fold. And that's what we do. It's a small part we play with this show and some of the other work we do in growing Nostr adoption outside of the show as well.
Right. And focusing my energy on what I can touch around me, what I can change. It might be small, but again, if everybody in the world did a small change, it'd be one massive movement, you know? So that's trying to find that balance, that push and pull, that give and take as a culture, as a community. Find where you can help and you'll find that it's rewarding. So that's it.
And with that, QW, it's time to welcome back Rev Hoddle to the show. Welcome, Rev.
Hey, guys. Thanks for bringing me back on. I'm really excited to... that sermon's got me pumped, actually. I'm excited to talk about the culture. It's almost like we need to remake that almost... meme. I'm in it for the tech. I'm in it for the culture. You know, like, you come for the gains. You stay for the culture, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's almost like we mold our sermons to our guests. You know, we like to pump them up. Hey, there is a burning question though, Rev. Is the biomass and wood gasifier in operation? I think the last time we spoke, it might've exploded.
Well, it did explode and I have not had a chance to return to that project. I know, basically where I'm at with it is I need to just find somebody with some welding expertise to help me fabricate a proper unit. But dude, don't get me started on this Bitcoin mining stuff because I could go off on a tangent with it. My next project here is to figure out how to make a cooler, a freezer or a refrigerator with a Bitcoin miner. And I'm going to be doing that through evaporation, basically.
Hey, Rev, the last time you were on the show was episode number 38. I think that was it was shortly after Nostrville, late November, I believe. So it might be helpful
Where I met Rev. It makes sense.
Right. Yeah. It might be helpful if you take a minute or two for our listeners and sort of give them some context on what we're talking about with biomass and wood and everything that you're doing, right? And also another question I have is, are you completely self-sufficient?
Well, to answer the last question first, no, I'm not completely self-sufficient. So there's the different, there's you could be self-reliant and self-sufficient, and those two things are kind of different. Needless to say, I still rely on centralized systems. I'm not totally self-sovereign. I'm not out there a man on my own island or anything like that. But what I do, I'm certainly working towards that. And one of the key things that I employ to help me achieve this sovereignty, this self-sufficiency, is I use permaculture. And so I've got a 20-acre homestead here. We practice permaculture, applying that to build integrated systems. We've got a sheep grazing system integrated. It's a silver pasture sheep integrated grazing system. So we're growing fruit and nut trees with perennial vegetables and berry crops while grazing our sheep amongst the pastures in there to raise lamb meat. We've got a cannabis garden, which doubles as a rabbit colony. So we're producing rabbit meat and cannabis in the same space. We've got a food forest that is producing not only our subsistence crops, but also perennial fruits and vegetable yields there. And so you can get the idea. Everything that we're trying to do is maximize the yields that we can get by integrating things together here at the homestead through this lens of permaculture. And so Bitcoin mining plays a large role in that. we use Bitcoin miners to dry the laundry that we use to make the beds and stuff for the Airbnbs that we run. We use Bitcoin miners to dehydrate the food and medicine that we collect from the food forest and so on and so forth. We use Bitcoin miners to soak up the extra solar power that we're producing. And so I was trying to build a Bitcoin miner that would run on the prunings and the waste biomass of things that we could produce at the homestead. I got close. I didn't quite achieve that.
And it exploded? Was that excess methane or something like that?
Well, so when you're doing a wood gasifier, what you're trying to like create this low oxygen fire, which extracts the volatile gases from the wood or from the biomass itself. And then you basically are pushing those volatile gases through a series of filters and cooling mechanisms to make it suitable to then put into a standard gas generator. And so if you're not doing this properly, those volatile gases can go the wrong direction in your flow. And because I had basically built this, it was just a proof of concept one from the hardware store with like a metal trash can. So I didn't have good seals or anything on it. Those volatile gases went the wrong direction and the whole contraption basically exploded.
Sounds like it's like similar to eating Taco Bell.
When I was looking into biomass in a previous life, and this is more around animal waste, basically the animal waste would be collected in these lagoons, or I think they call them lagoons, and it would anaerobically digest, right? And the gases that would, the bacteria in there would anaerobically digest the waste and release methane and carbon dioxide, which was then piped to a turbine, which would separate the carbon dioxide from the methane, liquefy the methane, which would basically give you, I think it's called biodiesel, if I'm not mistaken, right? Or biomethane or something like that. And then that's what would be used as fuel. Is that a similar principle that you try to follow, or is the wood thing completely different?
Well, so we don't have so much so what you're talking about is using the manure as the energy source for the fuel, right? So you're right. Putting the manure in this system, which would then cause it to create these gases, extract those gases, and use that to generate your power. I'm able to utilize my manure first for fertility in growing things. So I don't have so much extra manure around that I'd produce power with it. It's more valuable to me to actually use it to fertilize plants. But I do have a lot of extra biomass because I've got trees that are growing that need to be pruned. I've got Well, that's primarily what I'm after, right? Is then there's Deadfall, right? A tree dies, it falls in the woods. I have 20 acres, so, and because I built this incredibly efficient rocket mass heater, which I use to heat the house, I can heat my house with, I heat a 900 square foot living space with around 2 cords of wood a year, which is fairly, that's a small amount of wood to heat that space, especially in Michigan winters. We're technically zone 6 now, so the winters are getting more mild, but needless to say, I use very little wood to actually heat my house, and I've got more deadfall than what I need to heat the house. So what do? Instead of piling this up and letting it rot, why not burn it and make it some power with it? I can use that to power my everyday things, my appliances, my lights, whatever it might be. And should I have extra, then I can use that power to mine Bitcoin.
Got it. So there is no bacteria involved here, right? That's producing the methane and carbon dioxide. It's a different principle then with the wood.
Well, yeah, it's just a totally different system. Yeah,
Any new inventions that or contraptions that you've added onto the property since we last spoke, Rev?
Before you answer your new inventions, I just love not seeing what exactly he's working. I don't know if you put pictures up or you did any videos, but it's so foreign to me that I just think about Doc from Back to the Future and his invention area, you know, just trying things out. And I love every aspect of this. It's exciting as just a listener, but I'm sure it's just as exciting when a project actually you pull one off.
Gets excited when I actually get something to work, but most of the time she thinks I'm just fucking around, you know. She's like, you should be doing something, you know, go move some heavy shit, that's your job.
So, we call that tinkering in my house. What are you tinkering with over there?
I've got to say our pleb community is strong with the mad scientist. I think we have Rev, we had David of the Desert, and there are a few others as well. I think it's brilliant. Would you consider yourself a mad scientist, Rev?
Yeah. I mean, and so it was like second grade. The teacher would like recognize these aptitudes of the students and give them these like specialized awards. Or anything. I didn't get good grades in school, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, yeah, I can figure this shit out. Like I can like build some stuff. The thing is like, I don't take like a very scientific approach to doing anything. I just kind of like fuck around and find out and just build upon this intellectual capital and experiential capital that I've got and say, well, I've kind of done something like that before. What if I did it like that? And then added this new layer and try that out. And I have a lot of junk laying around, and this gets into like the permaculture principles. Like my wife thinks I'm a hoarder and I just save all of our trash. And first of all, I challenge anyone, if they think that they're being like environmentally friendly, try and be responsible for all your own trash, collect it and try and utilize it. And you'll see how much waste you actually produce. But second of all, I'm always like, this is good stuff. I can use this for something in the future. And so a lot of the things that I'm trying to do, while I could make it more sleek and shiny or whatever, like just more smooth and operate with better efficiency, I try and make sure that I use the shit that I've just got laying around. Because one, to make my wife happy to like get rid of it all, right? And two, because it's free. And I think that can set an example for other people. Like, all right, so you have this waste stream or whatever it might be, and you can take this stuff and utilize it to do something cool. So to wrap it up, like it's basically, I think that I am a mad scientist, and I'm just a mad scientist that like likes to work with trash, basically.
Avi, can a mad scientist know they're mad?
That's another burning question right there, KW.
So going back to before I rudely interject, any new inventions at the homestead?
So my favorite thing that I've actually had success with, and I was like jumping up and down when I figured this out, was so I make maple syrup here at the homestead, and I've been doubling the amount of taps that I do to produce the syrup. So I'm doubling the production every year. I did not double the equipment I have to process my production this year, but I doubled the amount of production that I produced. And so I ran into this problem where I had a bottleneck. I had all this sap that I collected that I could not concentrate fast enough to boil. And so what I use is a reverse osmosis filter to concentrate the sap before I boil it. So I'm basically removing the water from the sap, pre-concentrating it, and that allows me to spend less energy on boiling this sap and turning it into syrup. I use propane to boil it because I don't have a proper wood-burning setup. And so I had to figure out something to basically widen this bottleneck. And I've been playing around with Bitcoin mining, doing other things, dehydrating, drying clothes. And something finally clicked. I had been joking in this pleb miner chat, the pleb miner mafia, Ungovernable Misfits. They do this podcast of PMM, the monthly PMM podcast. But so the group that I was chatting with this, we had been joking about that the fact that canola oil is a dielectric fluid. And that you could use canola oil to like do immersion Bitcoin mining. And I was kind of like, well, has anyone ever done this? No, you shouldn't do it. It's not going to work. And so what I needed to do was preheat the sap to make the reverse osmosis filter works most efficiently at when the fluid going into it is like 77 to 80 degrees, you know, in this upper range. The sap that I've got is in the low 40s, sometimes in the upper 30s. It's very cold because of A, it's wintertime, and B, I don't want it to be warm because if it's warm, then it spoils. So I have to figure out a way to preheat the sap just before it enters the filter so that way the filter can remove more water from it more quickly so I don't have this bottleneck anymore. And the way I was going to achieve that was by using a Bitcoin miner. And so I basically put the Bitcoin miner inside the canola oil. I use the Bitcoin miner to heat up the canola oil. Then I exchange the heat from the canola oil into the sap just before it goes into the filter, allowing the filter to process the sap. And I was able to double my production and actually not only double the production, but I was getting better results out of that filter than I'd ever achieved before. So like the filter was actually overperforming even with the higher volume. And at the same time, I'm getting this return in Bitcoin for my work on it. And so I was using less propane. I was earning Bitcoin from it. And I was able to double my production without doubling the size of the equipment that I had to do so. And so that's been my favorite freaking new thing. And so since I've been able to learn that, like, okay, canola oil works as an immersion, a dielectric fluid, you can put a Bitcoin miner in canola oil and you can, like, canola oil you can get anywhere, right? You could go to the gas station and get enough canola oil to put a Bitcoin miner in it. And it's cheaper than Bitcool. The problem that everyone's citing is that it doesn't last as long. Bitcool or all these do you want to interject there?
Rev, I'm shocked. I really am shocked. That you're saying that seed oils are good for you?
Satoshi's syrup. Seed oils
they're good for production, right? So this gets into like this idea of the fiat subsidy, right? Bitcool is probably not subsidized by fiat, so therefore it's expensive. But canola oil is incredibly subsidized. And so you're allowed to, basically I'm taking advantage of this fiat subsidy and I'm using it to turn it into Bitcoin.
And selling Satoshi syrup on the side there, right?
Well, and that syrup is ultimately going to earn me Bitcoin. I go to Bitcoin meetups and sell the syrup at the Bitcoin meetups. So yes, I'm earning Bitcoin producing the syrup, and then I'm earning Bitcoin selling the syrup as well.
Reciprocity there. I mean, that's a full permaculture circle there that you just performed.
It is, and it's also a speculative attack on the U.S. dollar, QW. He's using the canola oil subsidies to short the dollar. It's remarkable.
Oh, man, we're going to probably have a whole show on that.
The canola oil won't last as long as the Bitcoin. But I don't need the canola oil to last 10 years. I just need it to last 3 months while I'm doing my maple syrup production. And I've actually got the hash board of the Bitcoin miner still soaking in that canola oil to see if it does corrode it, if there is any issues, to see if I can turn that on and make like a Bitcoin hot water tub or something and take a bath in the evening with it, run it in the morning and heat up some water, whatever, experiment with that. So, but anyways, the canola oil is like kind of this cool Satoshi little...
There. The spa of Satoshi.
Yeah. Just something you can, anyone can get and play around with. Like immersion mining is kind of like this, it seems like this scary, technical, need a lot of different equipment. And I'm trying to prove once again with trash, canola oil ultimately is trash, right? That you can like do some cool shit and prove some concepts. And just get your experiment with immersion mining this way.
And are you doing something with a heat pump also? Were you heating upstairs or something with miners?
Yeah, well, that's the and so to heat a house with a Bitcoin miner is like the most straightforward, simple application you can use. I mean, you could start off with an S9. In your bedroom at night and make that a space heater, get all the fans to make it quiet, run it at a lower wattage so it's a little bit more quiet. But you can also just basically plumb a Bitcoin, like all I did was cut a hole into my cold air return right before it entered the furnace on my HVAC system and just put the Bitcoin miner right up against that. And then I just turn the circulating fan on. So it's continuously sucking this hot air from the Bitcoin miner into the system. And that supplements the heat that I use for the Airbnb where my guests stay. Like I said, I heat the house with wood. But when my guests are here, they use an electric air source heat pump. And so I was using a Bitcoin miner to supplement that heat. Very low hanging fruit. That's like the gateway drug, right? The S9 space heater, then cut a hole in your cold air return to plumb a Bitcoin miner into it. That's like where you get started, I think.
Yeah, I'm in the not the docks, but I'm in the pool business, and I think about heat pumps often because after about 70 to 70 degrees, they kind of become ineffective on heating, and I'm always just trying to think how do you compensate that with Bitcoin mining generating heat to kind of enough to cool warm a pool in, let's say, the winter. But that's just where my mind's at. So that's interesting. So
there are definitely people that heat a pool with a Bitcoin miner.
Yeah, I mean, they do like the immersion and then run the pipes through there, kind of like a radiator type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I don't. Yeah. Are heat pump pool heaters common?
Heat pump, yeah, they're pretty common here. But we're, I think it's 120 out right now degrees. So it's
you don't need to heat the pool.
It extends your season on both ends. But it's something that whether they're popular, I mean, you probably not in Phoenix, kind of the immersion heating for a pool, but certain applications, temperatures and things, we have no problem finding heat until we get into winter, and even that's not that cold comparatively. So yeah. So you have the Satoshi syrup, but I hear you're a tea salesman now.
Oh yeah, well, I've been not selling the tea, but I've been giving the tea away. I think the tea is more valuable than I could sell it for. It changed my life.
Yeah, talk about that for a minute, if you don't mind.
So I built a Bitcoin mining dehydrator. That was kind of the next step, right? So you heat your house with a Bitcoin miner, but like we're talking about, the winter eventually ends, and you've got this heat. You need to do something with it. You want to keep your Bitcoin miner running. Here at the homestead, we've got a lot of weeds growing. We've got a lot of things that we could preserve with a dehydrator. And so that was the logical next step, is like, all right, so I can't heat the house with my S9 anymore. I'll take my S9. I'll build a box for it, cut a hole in the back of the box, put that S9 up against it, put some trays in there, blow hot air into the box. And that's a dehydrator, right? Very simple thing. I built it with wood that I had laying around in the garage. I didn't spend any money building the box, right? No, that's not true. I did buy some aluminum window screen for the trays. But I was searching for it. So now that I had this dehydrator, I was searching for anything in my backyard that I could dehydrate that was useful. Because now I had, in the past, when before I had the dehydrator, I could see this thing that was useful, but I didn't need it right now. I just needed to be able to preserve it for later when I would need it. And so I would ignore it. But now anything that is useful, I can preserve it and then access the utility of that in the future. And so I was like finding all these weeds, pulling weeds. Oh, is this useful? What does this do? And I found this weed. It's called purple dead nettle. And purple dead nettle, I found, has a strong antihistamine effect when you brew it as a tea. And I thought, well, I've got pretty bad allergies and I need some antihistamine. Why not? I'm going to try this out. So I pulled it up, weeded my garlic, dehydrated this purple dead nettle. I made a tea with it. And I found that it cured my allergy. Like the symptoms were gone immediately. Like as I was drinking it, I could feel the swelling go down in my eyes, my sinuses opening back up. And what I found was that I could drink a cup of this tea once every 4 hours, and it would basically alleviate my allergy symptoms entirely. And that. I've been searching for something to do that isn't an over the, like I've resigned to Benadryl, right? Because Benadryl was like the only thing, they're all bad. I think all these over the counter allergy medicines are not good for your health. These antihistamines. I was looking for a natural antihistamine my entire life. I finally found it and it worked so well and it was free. And actually I got it by doing, one, I got Bitcoin for producing it. Two, I was weeding my garlic, so I was helping my garlic grow, and now I've alleviated my allergies by making this tea with it. And so basically I give this tea away value for value on Noster for anyone that wants to try, and if they have bad allergies and they want to try this tea out, I will send them some purple dead nettle so that they can see if it works or not for free. And if it works, then they can ship me some sats for the value that they get out of it.
You know, I've heard of people. So there's goldenrod is the other one, right? That's a good natural antihistamine. I don't know if it grows out where you are, Rev. Are you familiar with goldenrod? It's those yellow flowers, long yellow flowers.
Oh yeah.
What I've heard people do with that is they dry it or dehydrate it, and then they soak it for I think a month in something like Everclear. And then they bottle it. So you just have you put it in one of those bottles with droppers in them. And that seems to work as well. I don't know if you've looked into that kind of stuff.
I mean, at this point, I don't need to. I found my cure, but certainly people should try it. I had tried like bee pollen. I tried many different tinctures and things like that. And maybe goldenrod was in there. I couldn't say for sure, but this purple dead nettle stuff, it really works well. And I wouldn't have found it had I not had a Bitcoin mining dehydrator. And so this is kind of like going into the idea that like when you participate in Bitcoin, your life gets better. Whether you're running a node, whether you're participating in this value culture, going to meetups, whatever you're doing, the deeper you participate, the better your life seems to get. This is my personal experience. I mean, it just seems like any angle which I dig deeper into Bitcoin, I'm improving my life.
Listen, man, Bitcoin fixed your allergies. What more can you ask for? So, Rev, talk about you have the property there. I think last time you mentioned that you have visitors there, travelers who stop by. Is that right?
Yeah. So we have two listings on Airbnb right now. We're about to start a third. And so we host hundreds of people at the homestead every year.
Mm-hmm. So what have you started accepting Bitcoin payments?
Yes. So I give these tours. I give a homestead tour. It's included with your stay. It's anywhere from an hour, 45 minutes to an hour, or even longer if we're enjoying each other's company, right? And on that tour, I talk about permaculture, how we're living more, we're developing these skills and being more sovereign. But I also talk a lot about Bitcoin and how Bitcoin has been a missing piece and a key role in what we're doing here at the homestead. And so a lot of people, and I'm finding this out recently, especially this year, a lot of people have heard of Bitcoin. They even have some Bitcoin. They don't know how to use it. And so I'm like, hey, you've never sent a Bitcoin transaction. You just have an account on Coinbase, or you just bought it through Cash App or whatever. Here's an opportunity for you to buy some of our products with Bitcoin, use it. You can see how we benefit from it because you've taken this tour and you've heard my spiel. And then from that, we sometimes do have guests that rebook. And when they rebook, they book privately and they pay with Bitcoin. And also from going to these Bitcoin meetups and participating in the Bitcoin culture and community more broadly, regionally, and kind of within a few hours driving from my place, I end up meeting people that are interested and coming and checking out what I'm doing and paying Bitcoin to stay. And so we do, I'd say that the Bitcoin bookings at our to stay at our homestead in the yurt or the tiny house or the house are maybe 5%, less than 10% of the people that are coming to stay are paying with Bitcoin. But I'm working very actively to try and increase that because ultimately what I want to do, I think Bitcoin is the defining border of this new culture. This Bitcoin money is the definition of the culture. And so if I can participate with more people that have Bitcoin and we can participate in a circular economy together, we're going to be building more cultural capital and improving each other. And so, yes, I would like to host more Bitcoiners, of course.
What is your starter pack for the folks you onboard? Do you get them on chain? Do you get them set up on a specific Lightning wallet?
So I think the easiest, so what I found, and this is obviously far from ideal, okay? If you participate in Bitcoin a long time, you understand the privacy implications and the dangers of KYC Bitcoin. But I think that many people start with KYC Bitcoin. I did myself. And this is a way to get people on the path towards participating in the culture and community maximally. And so they're going to take a risk for a short period of time, and hopefully they learn something and continue their journey. But needless to say, Cash App I found is the best way to onboard people that I host here. Most people have Cash App and they just didn't know that they could buy Bitcoin with it. And that's a way, they've already got a balance on there or whatever. They can buy some Bitcoin. Sometimes they have to still take a picture of their ID and this bullshit KYC. See friction, but it's pretty fast with Cash App, like where you can do it while we're standing there in 5 minutes or whatever, right? And then they can have the Bitcoin and then do the transaction, and they can learn about what that's like. So Cash App is what I recommend for the stack of the like very first touch to Bitcoin beginner.
So as someone who lives in New York State, I do have access to Cash App. But Lightning is disabled in the out where I am. So how does it work? So I've never seen how Cash App would work.
Why would that be, Avi? Why is Lightning the issue?
It's about a year ago, or actually early days of Nostr, one of my first questions to Jack Dorsey was, when New York for Lightning? And he replied, this is a long time ago, but he replied saying it's complicated. And that was that.
That's New York for you, man.
Well, I wasn't aware of that you can't do Lightning on Cash App. Can you still do on-chain though?
Yeah, you could do on-chain. You could buy. You could do everything except Lightning on Cash App. So how does it work then? When you onboard folks, they make a purchase, Bitcoin purchase, and then they can immediately use that in Lightning.
From my experience, yeah, some people for whatever reason they don't have to KYC any more than they've already done. They can just straight up buy the Bitcoin, and maybe they bought Bitcoin before, or done the process or whatever, and just didn't remember. But they could buy the Bitcoin and send me over Lightning right away. Some people have to pull out their ID, take a picture of their face, do all the fucking shit, and then they can get on there. But it happens like you can pretty much do it instantly on Cash App from my experience. People and every other thing I've tried, like Strike, there's some waiting period. There it's just much more friction. It's slower. I just don't know any other way for people to, like, if you don't already got the Bitcoin, how do you get it? Like, it's like right now, Cash App has been the fastest way that I found people to be able to get it right now and be able to send over Lightning too.
Yeah, that right now thing is the kicker. And then it's tough. I would tend to agree with you on that too. I think a lot of quote unquote normies have it already, or they just have to install it again because they haven't used it in a while. But it's something that's more familiar with them, and it gives you someone that just thinks it's just magic internet money, or it was just used for drug deals or something. It gives legitimacy to it when they're using a Cash App versus, like, you know, download this super super shadowy wallet real quick.
Well, how would it also? Well,
and I think
if you were to get them to download, you can't even do Phoenix anymore in the States, like something like a Breeze, right?
You got to get with the time, Avi. You know, we're struggling out here.
Well, they only have fiat, right? So you have, like, okay, download Phoenix. I'll sell you some of my Bitcoin so you can send it back to me. That's ridiculous, right?
Just trying to dump on
no
them.
Way that you have to have a fiat on ramp. And so, yeah. And by the way, I charge a 3.5% premium because my stats are KYC free, you know, like they're going to be like, fuck you, dude. So you have to find a KY, like you have to have a fiat on ramp for people, like guests that are staying at my Airbnb. I tried to put like a Strike, reference code, so we each get $5, thinking that that would give them the incentive to like go through the trouble and kind of KYC in advance and see by the end of their stay if they could do it. But it was just nobody ever really would go through that effort. And so I don't know if there's a better solution. I do find people that have like Bitcoin on Coinbase, right? Or they have Bitcoin already. And I'm like, okay, well, you can. A lot of times they can't log into their coin, but you know, they don't have their passwords or whatever. They can't do it, right? They can't get access to the Bitcoin. But I'm like, if you've got Bitcoin on Coinbase, you need to go to the Bitcoin meetup, and I'll go and find for them where their local Bitcoin meetup is, and then send them that information and be like, look, you go to this Bitcoin meetup, you will find people there that will help you utilize. You will get a lot more utility than just like number go up from your Bitcoin. And you're going to meet some cool people too. And so that's been a lot, like the way that I stopped trying to orange pill people, right? Like I'm not trying to take somebody who doesn't know about Bitcoin, hates Bitcoin, heard it's for drug dealing and all that, you know, all that bullshit, listens to all the FUD. I'm done trying to convince those people. But the people who have Bitcoin already, I'm trying to like open the door and be like, look, here it is. You can walk right in here. This is easy. And once you come in, you're going to be welcomed. The Bitcoin community is here to like help you and support you. We're trying to build cultural capital at these Bitcoin meetups. We're bringing these people in. We're helping them build a stack. We're helping them learn about the dangers of KYC Bitcoin. We're building circular economies. And so those guests, I've never heard back from anyone that said like, hey, I went to the Bitcoin meetup and thank you for introducing me, but it's the least I can do. Right, show them where the local Bitcoin meetup is, there wherever they're at.
Yeah, makes sense, Rev. So let's talk about the ethics and principles of permaculture. I know there's a bit of a...
And maybe cater it to the pleb culture. What you find important between the ethics and principles.
Well, the ethics and principles of permaculture are fairly simple, right? Well, the ethics are simple. Earth care, people care. So I think almost anyone can agree with that, right? That's a pretty good ethical choice. Take care of the people around you, take care of the planet. But the third one I call non-extraction. Now, the technical way to say it is redistribution of the surplus back to the system. I think it's much more simple to put it as don't extract energy from a system that you're trying to maintain and create. You got to keep that flywheel spinning. And so there's 12 principles of permaculture. And we can talk about some of the principles that like apply specifically to Noster, right? Well, first of all, the non-extraction ethic, that to me just says like decentralization all over it, right? We can see that centralized systems, the more the system becomes centralized, the easier it is for it to become an extractive system. So Noster is decentralized by nature, right? There's no way to, well, we'll see. Time will tell if it becomes centralized or not, but I don't think so. And so it's already naturally practicing this third ethic of non-extraction. Now, of the 12 principles, I think like the top three for that, like Noster can glean from this, are integrate rather than segregate, right? So because you can take your social graph anywhere, you as the user can have this like integrated Noster experience where you've got different reasons. You can use your NPUB or your NSEC for all these different use cases, but ultimately you're participating on one platform. And so you've integrated all of these different things together that were in previous setups, like let's say social media, for example. You've got your Twitter account, your YouTube account, your Gmail account, blah, 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 all these different accounts. Now you've got one account that's integrated rather than segregated. So Noster is definitely following the integrate rather than segregate principle. Value the marginal is another permaculture principle. So you got to find the magic that happens at the edge. And Noster is perfect for this because it's a protocol, right? And so people can do weird shit at the edges of this protocol. Instead of just making a Twitter clone, you can do all kinds of other things. And the cool thing is that you can take your social graph with you to experience these other things. So because I'm integrated rather than segregated, I can go to the margins with all my connections and see what happens there. And so Noster is participating in permaculture or following the permaculture principles in that regard. And then the third is work from patterns to details. And so I think this might be the most important thing is that because it's a protocol, it's creating a pattern. And so like you can hear, there's a saying that's like, if you like the idea of like working inside the box, right? I went to art school, I went to film school, and I found it was a lot easier for me when I had a project that was defined by rules, because then I could see how I could play around with those rules to get all wacky and weird. And if it was just an open blank slate, I was kind of under this analysis paralysis where it's like, what's the best thing that I can do? How can I, you know, yada, yada, yada. There's too many options. So because there's a protocol in Noster, you can fill in these details and then get that weird marginal shit. And so the combination of integrate rather than segregate, value the marginal, and work from patterns to details, I think is what's going to define how Noster blossoms into this like really interesting location. I like to call it a location and we talked about this in the last recording, the location where Bitcoiners get together to build cultural capital.
Rav, you've just blown my mind, because you've convinced me that Nostra is a permaculture, right? It follows all of
the
yeah.
Well, and it's up to us to make it a permanent culture, right, Avi?
you know, Rev, I've heard Yoni Appelberg. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's a Swedish doctor, and he's studied psychedelics, and he's a Bitcoiner, very strong Bitcoiner. And I heard a talk he gave where he took a similar track, sort of a similar deconstructive approach, and he made the case for how Bitcoin is a psychedelic because it meets all the criteria for a psychedelic. And I think you've done something very similar here. So if Bitcoin is a psychedelic, Nostra is a permaculture. Ain't that something?
I think a lot of times people are utilizing the framework of permaculture without necessarily realizing it. And I think that permaculture lends itself to complex systems, right? And complex systems tend to be decentralized systems. Nature is an incredibly complex system, and it's also incredibly decentralized. And that's one of the biggest aspects of there's a permaculture principle defined as observe and interact with nature. Like, a lot of the things that I'm trying to do are take the efficiency and resilience of nature and apply that to my like man-made ideas of a system. And I apply that to like Bitcoin mining. I apply that to my lens that I look at Nostra, all these things. Nature, like, and Bitcoin, ultimately, Bitcoin itself is like, I think, the first true natural digital system because of the nature of its decentralization. And so I think this is why I think permaculture and Bitcoin are like moving together. You might hear a lot of Bitcoiners talking about permaculture. They're moving together because permaculture is a way of defining what Bitcoin is.
You know, Rav, you should, if you haven't written about this, you should absolutely write about this, right? An article that says Nostra is a permaculture, something along those lines, where you describe the principles and talk about how Nostra checks every single one of those boxes.
Yeah, I mean, I could go on.
Put a chapter in there about how seed oils changed your life.
there's a few different books that could be written, right, about how do you make subsidized trash into Bitcoin, you know? But using value diversity is another permaculture principle. How many clients are there? How many, the diversity that's incentivized because Nostra is a decentralized protocol, it fits in once again perfectly. And we talked a little bit about this before we started recording, but small and slow solutions, that's a permaculture principle. And so I think right now people are very, there's a lot of change happening very fast. But ultimately, if we just protocols, once they kind of get, I won't say ossified, but once they get established, they change very slow and in a small way, because you don't want to fuck it up. Once there's a lot of, like Bitcoin, for example, because all your money is riding on this thing, you don't want to vote for a change that could fuck that up, you know? So you're going to be very conservative about what you don't care about, testing and production, you know, like you just want and move fast and break things. Hell no. You want to take it small and slow and just move along. And if there's an absolute need for change, you'll do it. And so you can see the Nostra, Bitcoin, these decentralized systems, they very much lend themselves to this idea and framework of permaculture.
Yeah, and it was interesting when you said that when you're at art school, you know, working within the box, you kind of wanted guidelines. I feel like your mind kind of works in a permaculture box now with your guidelines, and then you apply that, and that's your lens now, your visual lens when you're looking at Nostr, when you're looking at your local meetups. You kind of put all those together and kind of rebuild within that box. Would that be accurate?
100%, man. That's absolutely, once you start to, like, I live this permaculture lifestyle. I'm thinking about it all day, every day. I'm constantly, so another permaculture principle is self-regulate and apply feedback. And so I write a log of everything I do every day, all the tasks that I did, what I ate, how much I weighed, how much I walked, as much information as I can gather. I review that, the total of all that once a month, and then I review all of it once a year, the monthly reviews, right? And so I'm continuously accepting this information, regulating and applying the feedback. And needless to say, like, I've trained myself to, like, work in this way where all those principles and everything are operating in the background, and I'm just, like, being guided by them. I'm working within the box exactly.
And I mean, I think about permaculture, I think of homesteading as a lot of work for someone that's trying something new a lot too, especially when you deal with the cold, then the summer, you know, the temperature changes. How do you find time for, let's say, writing your book or giving a 1 hour tour of, the homestead from anybody coming in? It seems like for anybody, let's say I'm just going to start doing this. How do you find the time?
Well, as you integrate rather than segregate, your systems start to blend together. And this is kind of getting into this concept that I talk about a lot of the 8 forms of capital, where you can't hodl your time, right? Your time is being spent. It's churning. It's going all the time. And so it's up to you to decide how to spend your time. You're literally spending it, right? You're exchanging your time for some form of capital, whatever that might be at that moment in time. It could be experiential capital, just enjoying the sunset. It could be intellectual capital and reading a book. It could be social capital and enjoying some time with some fellow plebs. But needless to say, you're spending your time. And so the name of the game for me is, how do I stack with my time more than one form of capital at once? So, and this is kind of, and the 8 forms of capital is derived from these permaculture ethics and principles. So you can see how it can become a holistic, entangled system, where as I'm spending my time, I'm trying to build social capital by spending time with a friend that I've got, but we're also going to do some work. And I'm going to have a project. If you're coming over to my place, you're going to have a project to work on with me, right? And then while we're doing that project, we're feeding a system, which is feeding another system, which is feeding another system. And so the idea is that if you can spend your time building more than one form of capital at once, then that's how you have time to do all the shit, right? And as you start to build these systems and they become more and more integrated together, you'll start to find that, like, oh my God, well, this is drudgery here, over here. Let me think of an example. Okay, so here's an example. We rotationally graze our sheep, right? And so I'm moving my sheep every 3 to 4 days. And I have 2 separate groups of sheep in the summertime because I separate my rams from my ewes and my lambs. And so I'm moving 2 groups of sheep every 3 to 4 days. That was drudgery. I was like, oh my God, like, this group over here, okay, move, set up the fences, move them. Now I got to go over here and move the rams. I had to figure, and so it was roughly 50 or 60 sheep versus 3, right? But it's pretty much the same amount of work to move the shit for both of them. And so it's like, I got to figure out how to get these rams in a more static environment that's good for them. And so,
hey, Rev, could I ask a question? Okay. Would a border collie fix that problem?
No, The border collie, all the border collie would be doing would be guiding the sheep from one place to another. But you have to, I still have to set up fences to define the area in which the sheep are grazing. The reason why we graze the sheep rotationally are twofold. One, to distribute their impact and fertility evenly, and two, to break the parasite cycle. And so if you leave a if you leave the sheep in the same area for too long, they start to re-ingest the parasites from their manure in the grass that they're eating, and then you have to give them more chemical wormer. It creates problems. And so if you move them away from where they're pooping, then you reduce the amount that you have to worm them. And so I had to figure out a way to accomplish that, right? To not have the rams re-ingest the worms from their poop, but also not have to move them every 3 to 4 days. And so I found that if I integrated the rams in with my maple syrup sugar bush, where I produce my maple, so I had cut down some trees where I grow, where my maple sugar maple bush is growing, where my sugar maple trees are growing. I cut down the trees to promote the growth of the sugar maple trees. That opened up light, which allowed all this shit to grow up in the understory, which got in my way for collecting the sap. So if I realized if I unleash my rams in this area, they can eat down all of that undergrowth, keeping the forest floor clean for me to collect the sap. And then they have a place, a 2 acre place to play for a while, for a much longer period of time before I have to move them again. And so this is an example of, once you find drudgery in your system, you start to, you can use that drudgery, that problem, to solve another problem you have. And this is a permaculture saying, the problem is the solution. The problem of my moving my rams every day was the solution for me having to walk through all this undergrowth in my maple sugar bush. And so you can see, once you start to integrate the systems together, you get, like, for every stroke of work that I do, I'm accomplishing like 3 or 4 things.
So in that example, which forms of capital did you stack together?
So in that that instance, I'm basically building natural capital, right? I'm saving my time mostly. So I have more time to do other things. I wasn't moving the rams with the sheep every day, but I was using the rams to allow me to save time in collecting the maple sugar. So by putting the rams in the sugar bush, I not only save time in moving the rams all the time with the sheep, with the other sheep, but I also save myself time in collecting the sap because there's less shit in my way. And I had to feed them, I had to feed less pasture to them. I was able to grow more meat with my pasture because the rams weren't eating the pasture, all the ewes and the lambs were.
To answer Avi's question, that time that he saved now can be applied to any form of capital that he wishes to.
Right. It's so when you integrate the systems together, you have more time. And then if you can think about ways to use your time to build more forms of capital at once. If you're asking for an example of how to, like, stack multiple forms of capital at once, Bitcoin meetups are a really good example of that. So here's what I do. I produce the maple syrup. I bring it to the Bitcoin meetup. I give a presentation at the Bitcoin meetup. So now I'm earning sats. I'm building financial capital by earning sats from the maple syrup that I produce it. Then I'm building social capital by hanging out and enjoying my friends that are local to me at the Bitcoin meetup. Then I'm giving a presentation, which is not only building my intellectual and experiential capital because I have to, like, prepare for the presentation, but it's also building the cultural capital of my Bitcoin meetup. And so cultural capital is the collective intellectual and experiential capital of a group. So now I'm disseminating this capital that I built up amongst my peers. And so when I go to the Bitcoin meetup, I'm earning some sats. I'm building relationships with people that can help me out should shit hit the fan, and just enjoy my time spending with them. I'm helping them to learn something else. And then collectively, now we all, so the biggest, when you have a disagreement, the biggest problem or the most common reason why people have disagreements is because there's an imbalance in information on either side, right? People don't have the same information. And so if I'm able to give everybody the same information that I have, that creates a situation in which we're less likely to disagree and we're able to cooperate more. And so you can see by going to a Bitcoin meetup, I'm building many forms of capital all at once.
That's remarkable, Rev. I remember back in the day, people used to go to Bitcoin meetups to drink.
Well, that's a great reason, right? Social capital sometimes is enough, right? Just to hang out and have a beer with your pals. But if you approach it with some intention, you can really start to do something powerful. And I think this is what's happening in Michigan. I think more and more people are starting to realize this. Like, we're building a culture that is defined by Bitcoin. If you ain't got Bitcoin, you're not in our culture. If it's the same thing as if you don't have dollars, you're not in you're not in the dollar culture. If you don't have euros, you're not in the euro culture. If you don't have yen, so on and so forth. But Bitcoin in many ways goes beyond that, because Bitcoin has this moral and ethical component. Because if you run a node, you are submitting and agreeing to rules. You're doing some form of governance. You're actually participating in the governance of this protocol. And so you have a moral and ethical component combined with a financial component. And then there's the network component, right? Which I talked about once again. Noster is the location in the distributed way, but Bitcoin meetups are the local way in which you build this location for your culture. And so we're building a culture defined, the border is defined by Bitcoin. And once you start to realize that, and I think that we're starting to do this here in Michigan, that we've realized like we're building a culture here. That is when things start to get cool and the magic starts to happen, where people start to collaborate and cooperate in ways for a small group that is surprising, right? Everyone is really trying hard to work together.
Yeah, when you start getting traction, it really inspires, right? People start to see it instead of just kind of trying to understand it.
Yeah, I mean, you're experiencing it. So here's an example. You go to a meetup and you bring some stuff to sell, and you're not sure if you're going to sell one thing, two things, or whatever. But the first person that buys the thing, that kind of inspires other people to participate as well. And so there can be momentum that can be built up there. And then when other people see that, wow, this person brought some stuff and they're earning some sats and everyone wants to really support them, maybe I can figure out something that I can make or do or to participate in this too. And there's a snowball effect there where there was a guy at the Grand Rapids meetup. I won't dox him, but he had heard me talk on a podcast about doing this, participating in these meetups. And so he showed up at the meetup and he bought some maple syrup for me. And several months later, what is he doing? He's showing up with this tallow bomb that he's producing and selling that. And I was just like, hell yeah, dude. Because this guy, he doesn't have a 20-acre homestead. He was taking this connection that he had with the butcher and was able to get this beef fat. And he figured out that he could make a product that the people at the Bitcoin meetup might like to buy. And he sells it successfully. And that is what I'm after, man, is like, one, digging the Bitcoiners out of the woodwork, getting them to the meetup, and then two, inspiring them to figure out what they can do to bring to this to support and build cultural capital to build our culture, to give us the products that we need.
Love to hear that, Rev. Talk a little bit about Lake Satoshi. You told me it's coming up early August this year.
Yes. So Lake Satoshi is the big day is August 10th. You can come a few days before that. You can show up on the 9th, set up your tent camp. Basically, Lake Satoshi is a retreat. So it's you could imagine it as a giant private campground with a pretty sweet lake where you can put a boat on there. You can do some jet skiing. You could do some fishing. You could do some swimming. Show up. You set up your tent. You have a little fire. Meet fellow Bitcoiners. And then August 10th is like the conference day where there's presentation, speaking. There's kind of this bazaar of locally produced Bitcoin goods and services. People just kind of sharing their stuff, whatever they're doing to participate in the Bitcoin community and culture. And then Sunday, everyone kind of packs up and goes home. But Lake Satoshi is sort of the powwow. I like to call it the powwow of all of the region within the Midwest. It's not quite there yet, but like it's definitely the powwow of all of the Bitcoin meetups within the state of Michigan. If you can make it and you go to a Bitcoin meetup in the state of Michigan, you're going to Lake Satoshi. If you have the ability to show up, you're going to be there. It's not to be missed. And that mentality is starting to spread to the wider, greater Midwest region, where people from Chicago are going to come, people from Fort Wayne, Indiana are going to come, people from Cleveland are going to come, people from Europe are coming. It's growing. It's just, I don't know. It's like the best Bitcoin event that I've ever been to. Because one, the thing with Lake Satoshi is that you got to kind of be self-sovereign, right? Bitcoiners love to be self-sovereign, right? If you're not LARPing, you have the ability to like set up a tent and stay in it for a couple nights and enjoy yourself. It separates the people who are like not willing to put up with that bullshit in order to glean the benefits of doing so. And so you show up to Lake Satoshi, you set up your tent. Now you're part, like everyone is on the same page here. It just creates an environment for like very real pleb style interactions. There's like no bullshit, no sponsors. These guys don't even do it. They're not even making money. They're donating all the money from the tickets, you know, $21 to show up. They don't even keep a dollar from it. They're just doing this because they love Bitcoin and they love the Bitcoin culture and community. That's the kind of event I want to go to.
How many cast iron skillets do you think will be there?
I think there's going to be more cast iron skillets than there are stainless steel. That's for sure.
Yeah, stainless steel at the at the campsite. That's rough, man. Well, and you told me from the last episode that you like to joke about having the most Bitcoin meetups per capita in Michigan. So with that said, it's got to be just a powerful moment when you can all have that regional powwow. It's just because you know everybody's doing something different in your own state, and you come together for the bigger, you know, the same vision, the bigger event.
Well, yeah, like so in Michigan, our population is very decentralized, and so that leads to like this decentralization of all these Bitcoin meetups. And so we've got many meetups that are all regularly 10 to 20 people, maybe 5 or 6 of them, right? That's different than like, I don't know, if you could compare like the state of Texas or the state of Tennessee, like Austin meetup and the Nashville meetup, where there's just like this huge centralized big meetup that happens often. Michigan is having these meetups in a decentralized way. And so this is our version of like creating that like one moment where we can take this decentralized population and have that powwow and really commingle and share all at once. I try to make my way up to Grand Rapids. I make my way to Colon, Michigan. I'll even go to Chicago and Milwaukee and stuff. I'll travel a ways to go to a Bitcoin meetup because it's enjoyable to me. And like I said, I'm trying to also sell some stuff, present whatever. But when you can coalesce together in this large format, especially after you've built these relationships in more of like a smaller group and a more trusted way, dude, magic happens. I'm telling you, there's a vibe here that is like, have you ever been to like the early days of the South by Southwest Music Festival when it was just getting started?
Nope. No.
if you went to like the first,
I've been to camping festivals where everyone's there for the festival type of thing.
It just gives me this feeling of like this young early thing that like has some magic in it, you know, and maybe eventually it's going to get so big that the magic's going to die out. Like South by Southwest has had that magic die out, in my opinion, at this point. I haven't gone in years, by the way. Maybe it's not, but from the last time I went, it was not that great. And that doesn't matter. It's like the idea is that it's happening now and there's something going on there. And so Lake Satoshi is like the Bitcoin meetup, the Bitcoin event to attend of the summer of the year, in my opinion.
And how many years has it been now? Has it been, I guess answer that first.
This is the third year.
That's so what I thought.
The first year there, it was just like shoot from the hip. I have no idea what's going to happen. The second year they were like, okay, we were pretty successful. Let's try and expand this. And so it was a few hundred people, right, that were there. I think this year is going to be like a lot different. Like many more people are going to show up.
That's what I was going for. And I think it's important that first time, cause you're just like, let's just do it. We'll see what happens. And people show up, they show up, but it's that first step, kind of just breaking out of the bunker and doing something, putting something together,
and making once again, that effort. This is not Bitcoin Magazine motivated on like selling advertising, selling booths. They're not selling shit. They're just trying to create a sweet event for people to learn more about Bitcoin, get exposure to Bitcoin, share their ideas around Bitcoin and participate in the culture and community. It's like a purely what is that? Philanthropic thing. They're just like giving it. They're just opening their space up for people to come and have a good time.
Sounds like value for value, Rev.
Yes, there you go. Nailed it. Value for value. That's what they're doing. $21, it gets donated somewhere else. They're not keeping the money. They don't care, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, dude, awesome having you on again. I do want to, I'm going to ask you for two things. Give me two of your best links. One on maybe a book or something on the permaculture side. I think you have one in mind. And then maybe a little bit on the capital side when you were talking about the was it eight capital, eight laws or?
So as far as what I usually would direct people to for getting a sense of permaculture is David Holmgren is he's one of the co-founders, you could say, of permaculture. He was the one with Bill Mollison, who was developing these ethics and principles. And so he's a good place to start. And his website, the reading is called The Essence of Permaculture. If you search The Essence of Permaculture, you'll find this David Holmgren PDF. And that will give you a breakdown of the 12 principles and the three ethics. Now, I don't completely, and many Bitcoiners, I think, will also not really agree with many of David Holmgren's viewpoints or perspectives on the way the world is working. He believes a lot in this idea of energy descent and that we have to be prepared to like live like Amish people without power or cavemen or whatever. And should he see the world through a Bitcoin lens, he would probably change his perspective and think that we should be utilizing more power. So you have to kind of ignore some of that sentiment when you're reading through this Essence of Permaculture PDF. Needless to say, it's a good place that really breaks down what the ethics and principles are. Now, as far as the eight forms of capital, the original article that I read on that I was introduced to it through my permaculture design course was Appleseed Permaculture. And I think I've tried to link it recently and it's like that site is dead now. So you have to just search the eight forms of capital and something will come up. And I need to make, like you're saying, I need to put this stuff in recording and like put it on YouTube and everything, because I give these presentations at meetups and everything just for the plebs that are there, but I don't have anything for everyone. But so those are the two places to start. David Holmgren, Essence of Permaculture, and then just search the 8 forms of capital on your favorite Googler, and you'll find something there.
I love it. Anything else, Avi?
No, this is, I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, Rev. Love how you deconstruct things and talk about frameworks, right? It's very logical and in a way that resonates with me quite a lot. I'd love to see that blog post on one of the Gnostic clients, Yakihone or Habla.news, Rev, on how Gnostor is a permaculture because it adheres to all of the principles. And I'd also love to see something from you specifically on the 8 forms of capital. I don't know what your bandwidth is these days, but would love to see those blog posts from you because really, really enjoyed the conversation. And I think there's if you write those out as articles, they will resonate with a lot of people as well.
Well, you guys, you know what? I have to say you're very good at pumping up your guests. I feel super excited from the conversation. You've got me inspired to try and do some of this shit. And I think that in due time, it will come. So keep an eye out.
That's all awesome, right, man. And that's what it's all about. We do need to pump each other up and put each other on pedestals from time to time because, you know, we're in a powerful place. We have a beautiful community that can change a lot. We just have to believe in ourselves individually. So thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
Anybody listening, always support Value for Value. We do recommend listening on Fountain. Stream some sats. Hit us up on the Boostergrams, whatever it may be. And I will link a couple links in the show notes based off of Rev's recommendation. So thank you very much for listening. And until next week.
Goodbye.